And now, welcome to Chai with Manju, with your host, Dr. Manju Shen. And now, welcome to Chai with Manju, with your host, Dr. Manju Shen.
Hello and welcome to a very special Chai with Manju. Our guest today is the renowned Professor Srikant Datar. He is the 11th dean of the most prestigious business school in the world, of course, the Harvard Business School. He's a brilliant educator who's loved by his students and community at large across the world. Let's meet Padmashri Srikant Datar. Dr. Datar, I can't tell you what an incredible honor, a privilege, and a joy it is to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Manju, quite the opposite. It's a privilege to be with you and to have this conversation. I know you've been planning this for a while, and I'm happy that we're able to do this today. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
Thank you. So, you're an incredible role model, not just to your students, but to the community. And what amazes me is that people are so impressed with the way you give back. And I think a lot of these values were instilled in you in childhood, because I was reading that your professor dad always encouraged to give back the gift of knowledge. Your grandfather was a Padma Bhushan scientist. Mm-hmm. Your mother is a social worker who helps community at large so much. So tell us about those early years growing up in Mumbai in your family, and how did it shape you into the person that you are today?
Manju, I can't tell you how I am that you're asking this question, because it's such an important part of my life and continues to be. Because there are so many events that define us, and we become who we become because of those things that happen. And I grew up in Mumbai. I'm from a very close-knit family, as you said. Both grandfathers, doctors. My maternal grandfather, Dr. Pandit Padma Bhushan, for amazing work that he did in medical research. He was the founding director of the Indian Council of Medical Research. But I always remember that I did not choose my ancestors or my parents. I was just lucky to be born into my family and lucky to have had the influence that they had on me. So most of what you'll hear from me is my good fortune in many respects. But it's useful, I think, for people, for me to share, because I'm very happy to share that about my experience growing up. And my father was a freedom fighter in the Indian independence movement before he founded the Nautical and Engineering College, and very heavily influenced by Mahatma Gandhi. So we grew up in a household where Gandhiji's values were very deeply instilled in us. And he founded the college because India had no place where students could be trained for the Indian Merchant Navy. And so he wanted to do that. After independence, and that's what he did. What I remember most about growing up at that time, Manju, is the emphasis in our home on doing the right thing. I would see my parents act in this way. I would often see the cost of acting with integrity that they experienced. And those are lessons that have stayed with us throughout our lives. And so my brother Gautam and I were always taught to be disciplined and to always act with courage and integrity. You know, little stories are always helpful in these cases. So I want to tell you a story I love to tell. I've told this many times, but I love to tell it because it's such an important part of growing up. I must have been about 12 or 13 years old. I went to an amazing school, Cathedral and John Connon School. My parents sacrificed a great deal for us to go to that school in Mumbai. And we had birthday parties. And so one of these birthday parties was at the race course, and my friend invited me to it. We came from, as you can imagine, from what you described, comfortable middle-class family, but nothing, wealth wasn't something that that we had. But a lot of my friends were going to be betting at the race course. We were told if you wanted to bet, bring your own money. And so I went to my dad and said, give me a little bit of money. You know, not a large amount. I understand we don't have much, but, you know, just a little bit, just for fun. You know, I just want to join in the fun. And my friends were doing that, and it would be fun to do it with them. He very quickly, Manju, I can still remember where I was sitting, where he was sitting to this day, many, many decades later, very quickly and firmly said, absolutely not. No way. I then told him as a little 12-year-old would that, you know, I then won't go to the party because it'll be too embarrassing for me to go without any money. Everyone else is coming and you're not even giving me, I'm not even asking you for much. It's just a little bit and you're saying no. And he said, look, I'm going to tell you why I'm saying no. And it's not because I'm worried that you would lose the money. That if, in fact, I was sure that would happen, I would give it to you in a heartbeat. My worry is that you would win and learn from it an unfortunate lesson. And as for not going, he said, you should just think about why I'm saying no. Try to understand my logic and reasons. And I would advise you to go enjoy the party. Because there will be many times in your life where you might be the only one who has to take a particular stand. But if that is the right thing to do, don't just do what others are doing, but do what you think is right. I absolutely revered my father. It didn't take me long to know that his thinking was wise. And I did go to the party, had a great time. You asked about my mother. She was a social worker. I would say what I learned most from her was about poverty and about the role that we have. And you asked about giving back to others and the role that we have to do what we can to those who are much more unfortunate than and privileged than we are. And I'll tell you another little story because they always, I think, bring home the values that we were taught, which is she was a elected member of the Pune Municipal Corporation. As a corporator, you get certain amount of money to allocate to your constituency. And she had two big Jhopadpattis in her constituency, one of which was right, you know, close to a bigger one. And women had to go out into the general area to get water every day. And she felt that that was such a unfair thing, that they should get water in their own homes. So she used the resources that she was given to get a water tap connected to each home rather than go outside to get water every morning or whenever you needed water to drink, got a tap fitted in the home. So she passed away in 2005 and thousands came to pay their last respects. She had done so much for so many people. What surprised me were that many children came. And I asked them, you know, this is not a common thing for you to come to an event like this. It's a sad event. And so why are you coming? They told me that their mothers had sent them because often they came without their mothers. They came with some other mother, but not with their own mother. They were coming in groups and they would sit around my mother's body where I had just kept it before the funeral. We would before her cremation and stare at her face. And I asked them, you know, why are you, after a little while, I asked them, why are you doing this? What's the reason? And they said that their mothers had asked them to really study my mother's face so that every time they turned on the tap every morning and they thanked my mother, this was the last occasion they would have to actually know who this person was and what her face looked like before she was cremated. So my mother imbued in us that a life well lived is measured not by what one does for oneself, but what one does for others. They both made countless sacrifices. I can't even tell you all the sacrifices they made. So my brother and I could go to the very best schools and colleges. I absolutely would not be who I am were it not for them. And so I want to say in real tribute to them that you know, whenever I see my name card in front of my name when I'm, you know, in an event, behind it, I'm always thinking is their names and their values, not just mine. So I'm deeply, deeply grateful to my family. Pure luck, as I said, that I was where I was born and very aware of the values and what they have taught me and very aware that it's a high bar that they have set.
This is amazing. It's very inspiring, I must say that. So that takes me to the next phase of your journey that I was reading about. When you were preparing for your chartered accountancy exams, you happened to, by chance, see an ad for Indian Institute of Management in Ahmedabad.
Yep.
I read that your dad wasn't that time too excited about administrative or IFS. So, but you wanted to try that. Those were the last days to apply. I know those days physically we had to go and get the forms. And you convinced a cousin to get the form for you. It was the university was closed, but a clerk found that form. I'm thinking, did the clerk know that he was part in making the history as well?
I'm sure at that time, Manju, but look at that. Look at the role that luck played in whole set of events, right? The whole life would have been, but for that one event that occurred. And this is why I always say, you know, we must stay extremely humble because, you know, God is great and gives us opportunities, but I believe he does so that we can contribute to others. But you're absolutely right that clerk, on a day the institute was closed, happened to give the form to my cousin who happened to send it to me. I happened to get it in on time and then, of course, got admitted to IIM Ahmedabad. But I still remember that story with great thing about an completely, by the way, I did know that person after I went to Ahmedabad. I always kept a very, because I knew who it was and thanked him many, many times for me being there.
This little act of kindness and the results that they, you know, bring to us. I was thinking about that.
Yeah. And I think this idea of paying it forward, Manju, is very important.
Do you have any special memories of IIM that you want to share with us?
I mean, such a transformative experience, Manju, really, really was. And of course, you know the educational system we came from before, and then to go into IIM Ahmedabad with amazing, amazing, amazing student who were with you at the time. You know, you only know 1 year before and 1 year below, and then your own class. And I actually attribute a lot of my learning to them because it was through the case method. It was a tremendous amount of preparation and participation, as you know, founded with the help of Harvard Business School. The idea about listening actively to another point of view that you thoroughly disagree with, but still always wanting to listen, taking a stand after you've listened, deliberating, discussing, debating. It really teaches you to learn how to learn and how do you engage people in order to refine your judgment. And it's such a life skill and one that I still apply to this day in my work. So again, another lucky break to get to Ahmedabad and another lucky set of opportunities to learn in a way that is so invaluable.
Yeah, I remember reading one of your interviews that it was like a lottery. And then they were, some of your fellow colleagues, students were interviewed. And they were sharing their memories about you. And some of the fun memories was you did a lot of yoga, you ate a lot of omelets, and you played tennis.
I did all of that. And I did all of that. But what an amazing group of individuals. I'm still in touch with them. I owe a lot to them from what I learned from them, both in terms of their brilliance as well as their values. So, very, very fortunate to be at Ahmedabad.
Right. So, your journey at every step of the way is, you know, personifies excellence, really. You graduated with gold medal from one of the best institute in India, IIM. Then you were the first Indian who was accepted in Stanford doctoral program directly from India. So again, you made history there. Yeah. Then, of course, Carnegie Mellon, Stanford, and then you become the 11th dean of, which I said, the best business school in the world, the Harvard Business School. And I was looking at and actually watching the commencement speech that you gave this year. Yeah. And what impressed me the most was that right in the beginning, you told your students that look around you and thank those who've had your back, made you who you are. And this is the first time I heard that, and it was so touching. So I want to hear about who are those. I know you talked about your parents. Who are the others? Who were your mentors who always had your back and helped you get to where you are today?
Again, thank you, Manju. All of these are such important questions, because you always must appreciate that whatever we have achieved, you're saying all these things is not because of me. It's because of all the people who have helped you get there, and you always reflect on those individuals. I do that. I do that very often, as I described earlier. So I'll just do a few of those individuals. You know, I first I would start with Professor Bhattacharya, who was a professor at IIM Ahmedabad, and I asked him whether he would write a recommendation for me when I applied to Stanford, and he said he would, and he did. And then after I got in, I learned that what he had written. I have no idea whether that alone was the reason. I have other stories where I can never tell whether that alone was the reason, but I'm sure a very big reason. He had a beautiful flair of writing these things. And so he wrote in the recommendation letter that this individual you should take into your program, and I'm going to tell you why you should take him into the program. And he said, I don't know what Srikant Datar will lose if he is not admitted to the program. I just don't know the answer to that question. But I do know that whatever he would lose, Stanford would lose more if the school did not admit him.
Wow.
Obviously not true, Manju. Obviously not true. but an interesting way to phrase a recommendation to just suggest that, you know, there might be something that this person might bring to you, which is always what we look for when we are trying to bring candidates to the school. We always believe that those who we bring enrich the school a lot, you know, even in our classroom. So I'm always reminded of that, even as we think about who we admit now, because of the way they enrich the class. And that's what he was trying to, I think, basically say. I was fantastic mentors. Joel Dembski, my thesis advisor, Bob Wilson, who won the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2020, and whom we honored as a graduate of the school with the Alumni Achievement Award my first year as dean, and Professor Wolfson, Bob Kaplan, who has been a major source of both inspiration and guidance and mentor here at Harvard Business School. He was formerly at Carnegie Mellon. And so for sure, as you look at every, and then I can go to so many people in industry, Dan Bazella, who was the first time I went on a board at the Novartis board, and how much I learned from him, and all the individuals, all my colleagues on the boards from whom I learned from so much. So too many to name, but a very large number for sure. And I always say I would not be dean, but for all the individuals starting that you've so kindly allowed me to acknowledge and recognize, who made me the person I am. And so most of it I attribute to, you know, God's grace and great luck.
You know, when somebody is so successful, then you want to know what can I learn from that person and maybe get some of those qualities to rub off on me. So I always, I remember this year, I tried to go to the Harvard India conference every year. And while I was there this time also, the excitement amongst the students before you were going to get there. And once you get there, you know, once you come there, everybody's surrounding you, everybody wants a word with you. And, you know, the way they get excited, your approachability is, where you listen to them. And I know, of course, you did the listening tour as soon as you became the dean and listened to 1,000 people, then digitalized, you know, you're a great listener. And the students, of course, said that you have the most photographic memory. Somebody even said that he will even remember the first time you said something in class. I've met many professors at Harvard Business School living in Boston. You have so many friends, but your approachability, your dynamism is very appreciated by all. What are the qualities you think you have that or the habits, it could be said, you know, habits are a big part of our success,
yeah,
that you think help you succeed, and probably some people could learn from that, including me.
Oh, I'm not sure about that, Manju, at all. But, you know, I would say, I'll go before success, Manju, to say the things that make me happy, because I think if you do things that make you happy, you... You, whether or not you get success, you know, very much in a philosophical way, you don't look for success. And that's the last thing you should look for. But, you know, doing things that are right, doing things that are your duty, things that make you happy. So I'll respond in that way. I think the first is to stay humble. You know, you must always believe that every interaction you have, you grow and learn, you will learn from others, and you want, and I'm very much learning from you as we are having this conversation. So I'm always looking to see what I can learn. Second is, there is no bigger joy, and you would obviously see this from the background that you just described, in developing and mentoring people around me to be the best that they can be. So whether it was as a professor before I became dean, whether I'm now as dean, I really value developing people so they can be the best, and through them, they can change the world. And so if you ask me in that line, what I'm most proud of, it's that two of my doctoral students became deans of top business schools in the United States. Yeah. Three of them are tenured professors at Harvard Business School. So three of my doctoral students whose committees I chaired are tenured professors at Harvard Business School. You know, one of my MBA students, Stefan Bunsell, is the CEO of Moderna, the company that developed the COVID vaccine in record time. So developing people and mentoring them. And I've had fortunately been in touch with these individuals that I've described over many, many, many years. And that's something that gives me great joy. And then it leads to some success, hopefully, but more joy. Try to always think, as you were asking me earlier, coming from very early in my childhood, to leave the world in a better place than we found it. Try and give purpose and meaning to our lives and those of others as much as we can. I love to quote from the tennis great Arthur Ashe. I go to the US Open. You probably might remember, if you've gone there, see the statue of Arthur Ashe, and then this quote, which reads from, what you get, you make a living. What you give, however, makes a life.
Yeah.
And it's that thing about, you know, leaving the world better, contributing in some way. And then at the very basic and core, I don't even need to mention it, but important, is always act with integrity. As I said, I saw my parents do that at cost. Maybe difficult to do it in the short run, because you can think of trade-offs. Always, always, always the right thing to do in the long run. And with empathy. So feel for those who don't have what you have, and try and touch and inspire others as much as you can. So I would say those are things I've tried to do. I don't think I'm anywhere close to. I'm still improving, still learning. First point, to grow and learn, but at least these are things that I try to do, let me put it that way.
So I have to ask you a very important question, which I think a lot of people would want an answer, because I feel everybody wants to go to Harvard Business School. If I was younger, I would be knocking on the door myself. I'm sure my daughter would listen with bated breath. Hard to get into Harvard Business School. I was looking at year 2000. I think you had over 9,000 applicants, and out of that, 800 some were offered. So basically, looking at a 9% acceptance rate. So what kind of students are you looking for to join Harvard Business School? What's an ideal student?
Yeah. You know, I often say to people, Manju, that you only see those that come. You get a chance as dean to see those who were unfortunately not admitted. And I always ask myself the question whether, you know, I would be admitted at this point in time. It is so amazing, the students that we get. So what do we look for? I think identifying individuals who want to lead and make a difference in the world. You know, at the end of the day, that's what the mission of the business school is. if you can get people who are already thinking along those lines and then move them further in their journey, you're always better off. So what does, we just welcomed the class of 2025 earlier this week, and the chair of the MBA program, Matt Weinzierl, has phrased this so beautifully when he says that what we are about is hard work with humility for humanity. That's what Harvard Business School tries to develop. And so that's the kind of individuals you try to find, those who will work hard with humility to make a difference in the world. So what does that mean, Manju? It means academic excellence is very important. So you clearly need to have that. But also leadership ability, drive, empathy, the ability to lead teams. And so then as you think about the case-based pedagogy where students are learning from each other, having this kind of a diverse group of students with diverse experiences and cultures represented in the class adds to the learning. And then, as we wrote about in our book in 2010 on rethinking the MBA, how do you develop these critical thinking skills? Because, there's not a fixed body of every problem that a manager is going to face is going to be different. How do you critically think through it? How would you think innovatively? How do you think integratively? And then we added these two other elements called doing skills and being skills, which we also try to look for in our students, which is, knowing everything is good enough, but it's not good enough, because unless you apply what you know and do something with it, it's no good. And then being became important because as a manager, it's unlike, your profession as a doctor or a lawyer or others, where it's a little more you and your patient and client. Managers are always about leading through others. And so being skills, the impact that you have on others, how do you treat others with respect so they can deliver for you, become important skills. So these are the kinds of things we look for when we're trying to recruit the class.
Okay. So when I first met you a couple of years ago and we had wanted to do the interview, and you had said, let's wait a few years. So now that it's been a few years, I'm going to ask you, what do you think what have been the three biggest achievements that you think you've had since you became dean right in the middle of pandemic on January 1st, 2021?
I can now say, reflecting back and mind you, I would have even waited much longer, because these are just things that we have started now. So a lot more work to be done. But I think I viewed the pandemic as the gateway to Harvard Business School's future. And what I mean by that is the ability we did. I'll just summarize it in three or four things like you asked. First was the idea that we ought to, in certain areas, and this came from the listening tour, we ought to increase the collaboration that we have in thought leadership in important areas. So one, we created a new institute. We've never had institutes at Harvard Business School before. We created a new institute called Digital Data and Design Institute at Harvard, called D-Cubed, which is saying that technology is moving fast. This is before ChatGPT. And by the way, this institute is already helping us develop large language models that we will use as tutors in our classes, even as early as this year. But how, and we didn't know, but we could see quantum coming. We could see AI and machine learning continuing to accelerate. Obviously, the change to digital, but also design that is keeping in mind what are the challenges in the world that we're going with in technology. So how do we think about people and technology both at the same time? I often refer to that again, going back to very early days, Gandhiji's idea that science without humanity is one of his seven deadly sins, as you know, as is commerce without morality and knowledge without character. So, always trying to keep those things in our mind as we're trying to move things forward. So we created that. And we also thought that, there are so many interesting problems that the world is facing now that that business can play a role. So we created a second institute for thought leadership, Institute for the Study of Business in Global Society, where we are trying to address problems such as climate change, but thinking about it in a very different way. not just only climate, not just only economics, but how do you think about economic policy, energy policy, and climate policy all as one area of work? How do you think about entrepreneurial solutions to the world's problems? How do you think about building resilient and sustainable businesses here? So two new institutes to try and generate thought leadership. Then we have engaged in a very significant digital transformation of the school to achieve two things. One is lifelong learning for our alumni. So I did mention to the incoming MBA students this week that what you've been admitted to when you come to Harvard Business School, or our ambition as we are going forward, still to be done, is not just you're admitted to 2 years in the MBA program, but with using digital technologies, machine learning, and AI, can we engage with you in lifelong learning throughout your career? So as the world changes, problems change, what you need to learn, how do we engage with you? And that requires everything to be done digitally using machine learning and AI. And so we're involved in, we appointed our first chief data officer at the school, and we're involved in doing that. And then we're creating a new learning platform, Manju, where it's called the LXP. This is with the university and the Vice Provost for Advances in Learning, Bharat Anand, around how do we expand the reach of Harvard Business School, Harvard University, starting with Harvard Business School as the first test case for this, so that individuals who will never step foot on the Harvard Business School campus should have access to the knowledge that we create. Because if our mission is to educate leaders who make a difference in the world, how do we reach them? In the MBA program, we've made a lot of changes, and I won't get into many of the details around how do you innovate in the MBA program, both in the required curriculum and the elective curriculum. I will mention that for the very first time this year, students will have a required course in data science and machine learning at the school. And then we did a lot to improve MBA affordability. In 2022, we announced that, and we're very it's a very important step we took, that the lowest 10% socioeconomically will go tuition free to Harvard Business School for both years. Uh-huh. So, and we did that, Manju, because there's this firm belief that talent in the world is much more evenly distributed than opportunity and resources. It should never be the case that someone who doesn't have money to come to Harvard Business School cannot come. And so, so those are some of the things that we've been working on these last 2 years.
Astounding. I think in some ways, COVID actually accelerated growth for those who were inclined in those directions, isn't
it? Correct. Very much accelerated. It would have taken a long time otherwise, Manju, to get there. So COVID certainly helped.
Absolutely. And you emphasize a lot on leadership. So let me ask you, you do a lot of good things, a lot of serious things, and I'm sure they are fun. But what do you do for just total fun with no intentions? I know your mom was a tennis player. You love to play tennis. I saw you at the Kausiki event with Sharaj. So I know you like classical music. What else do you like to do for fun?
I think you got you got them, Manju. I'm amazed as to how much you already know here. But you know, obviously sports, and so tennis, swimming, and skiing are activities I do quite regularly through the year. Skiing, of course, in the winter period. But I love sport. I love watching sports too. I grew up playing a little bit of competitive tennis as a kid. My mother was a wonderful tennis player, so we got a chance to always partake in that beautiful sport. I love traveling whenever I get a chance. It's an opportunity to, again, learn and grow. So you do that, listening to music, as you said, and classical, as well as old Hindi songs are also a big favorite. And then, you know, whenever, obviously at different points of time, reading just to relax and learn. So I think across a range of activities just to have fun. But I also think on the other side, Manju, the things that I've benefited from, I think, outside this work environment is meditation. I think my father taught me that for a long time when I was a little boy, and I've always practiced it for many, many years. And so I do find that relaxing as well. So different kind of relaxation may not be, I don't know if I'd call it fun necessarily, but relaxation.
Tell us a little bit about your family. I had the good fortune to meet your wife, Swati, and you have three children, right?
Yeah, so Swati is the one I'll talk about, just completely the rock of the family. You know, as of course, is the person that makes everything be what it is, and all the joy and happiness that we experience, because these are not separate things. You know, what you enjoy, your joy at work comes from a lot of joy at home. And if you met her, you'll know, very unassuming and humble, extremely empathetic, and very, very compassionate and welcoming, caring, authentic. You know, I can't say enough about her. I am obviously biased, but I can say that, again, and talking about being lucky and people who have helped me, extremely kind, generous, and thoughtful. And Radhika and Gayatri and Siddharth are children, also proud of who they are and what they do. And, you know, it's always, these are always, you know, parts of this. In some sense, it feels like a different experience, but they're not. They're very intertwined, and each gives you joy and energy in doing the other. And I think if it was unbalanced in that way, it would be. My former dean would always say, and I always appreciated that comment, Dean Clark, that in his commencement speech, is that no amount of success at work is worth failure at home. So it's a good thing to remember.
You have so many interesting stories in your life. I have to ask you, how did you meet her?
it's a great question. And our parents knew each other, so we were introduced by them. And I didn't meet her in any other normal work environment. But I'm, again, very fortunate that that happened.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, tell me, what is next for Srikant Datar?
Oh, hard question. I still have, the next few years here to continue on the work and, work at the school and completely devoted to the school that I absolutely love and want to do as much as I can for it. Again, trying to, as I said when I was named dean, that the debt I owe to Harvard is so much bigger than what I can ever do for it. But whatever little I can do in my role as dean, at least it pays back some of that debt that I have. But so at the moment, it's there. And I think it'll be, focused. One of the great privileges of this role is the opportunity to have an impact in different ways. And I'm looking forward to having that impact as we, continue on this journey. So it's been fun. And I've certainly appreciated the opportunity to do what it is, and it is for sure, Manju, an extremely humbling experience. That's for sure.
I tell you, as a community, we are so incredibly proud of you. Just by doing what you do with so much kindness and humbleness, you make us all believe that we should never stop dreaming. You bring us hope and optimism. So I thank you for that. And thank you so much for coming on the show as well. Thank you.
My great pleasure, Manju. You are, of course, doing an amazing service to a lot of people by
thank what you.
You do both in your work. And I don't know how you find time to do what you're doing now, but it's amazing that you are.
Happiness.
That's for sure. That's for sure. None of us can do it without that. But I'm grateful to have had the opportunity to spend some time with you this morning.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.